Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
ESPN 97.5, presented by Zadok Jewelers.
KFNC 97.9 HD2, Mont Bellevue, Houston.
Don't sweat the technique.
You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Home opener, new era of Houston Cougar football. Willie Fritz, head coach of the Cougars. First game as the head coach. It'll be a thrilling night of thrilling plays, hard-hitting action, and unforgettable moments. Tickets starting at just $15. Head to uhcougars.com/tickets or call 713-GO-COUGS now to get your tickets. Come early, be loud, wear red. And we're giving away a pair of tickets right now to the first caller. We're giving away two pairs of tickets. Two pairs of two. To the first caller, first two callers, that tell the screener who Willie Fritz beat in his only New Year's Six bowl victory. Who did Willie Fritz beat? People are calling before they even get the question out. Who did Willie Fritz beat in his New Year's Six bowl appearance? First two to get that right, you're getting a pair of tickets to go see Houston, UNLV, Saturday at 6 o'clock. Tickets start as low as $15. Head to uhcougars.com/tickets. Call 713-GO-COUGS. Here's something that people are not thinking about when it comes to the Houston Texans' Big Three. Houston, we're talking about, you know, Nico Collins, Tank Dell, and Stephon Diggs. Did you know that the Houston Texans last year went with 21 personnel, the fourth highest of anybody in the NFL? Fourth highest behind the Ravens, the Niners, and the Dolphins. So the fact that they went 21 personnel, fourth most in the NFL, and that they only used 11 personnel 29% of the time, which was the lowest in the NFL. So lowest 11 personnel, fourth highest in 21 personnel. Is it kind of round peg, square hole that you have three receivers that you're trying to get on the football field?
I don't think so, because you've got an offensive mind like Bobby Slowick, and what was last year can definitely change this year based on the talent you have on your roster. And I think that overall, he can adjust to exploit the many talents that he has as weapons on this team, even with Joe Mixon as well into that mix, if you will. I feel like whatever they did last year, he can change. He's a brilliant offensive mind, and he will get the best out of all three of his wide receivers.
Yeah, I think there's some coordinators who kind of have trouble doing this. So I think that the jury's out when it comes to Slowick. And if you look at a lot of the San Francisco stuff, like, they don't play a ton of 11 personnel. Like, and that's where he came from. He came from Shanahan. And, you know, we mentioned the teams that play 21 personnel. The San Francisco's right up there. So I do think that we need to see how well Slowick adapts at doing something that hasn't, one, been something he's done a whole lot of. Now, only 1 year as an offensive coordinator, but very much followed San Francisco's path of a bunch of 21 and not very much 11. Again, lowest in the league in 11 personnel. Now, well, the Texans didn't have a third receiver last year. Well, did they not? You know, they had Noah Brown, who they brought back. They had Robert Woods, who still might be on this football team. They had a couple of young receivers who were all right, and Hutchinson and Mechie, who could still be on this football team. So I think that you need to see how good Slowick is at adapting with the players that he does have. I have confidence that Slowick's going to be good at it. Maybe that's just me being a homer. Maybe it's me being foolish. But I think that Slowick's going to be just fine. I like Slowick's offensive mind. I think that he'll be able to look around the league and see 11 personnel packages that he likes. But it wouldn't surprise me if they don't play as much 11 as people want them to play.
Maybe that's true. I just feel like you said, I think that there's so many people in this league that already look at him as a very, you know, ingenious young mind and one of the better play callers in football. I think he'll find a way to make it work. He's going to find a way to utilize all three guys. I think he's going to use Mixon in a variety of ways to expand how they use the running backs from this year to from going into this year as opposed to what they did last year. So I've got total confidence in Bobby Slowik. I don't think you're being a homer at all when you look at who he is and think that this is one of the best up-and-coming offensive minds in the game.
I do think that it's a pretty good tell that they're going to keep a fullback. Like, that's been a conversation today that I've seen. Like, oh, you know, maybe you don't keep Andrew Beck. He's been a little bit, you know, banged up. Or, oh, British Bulldog Brooks can fill in that spot. And maybe he can. Maybe British Bulldog Brooks is somebody who can play fullback in a pinch. But I think the fact that they use that 21 personnel, fourth most of anybody in the NFL, does give you an idea of like what Slowik's base is and what Slowik's familiarity is. And I think it's a huge indicator and a huge clue that they keep a fullback on the 53.
I think they will, too. And I think they like the versatility that Beck gave you a year ago because he showed how quick he can be even when he ran back the kick. I mean, the fact that he's got speed for a guy his size, you know, he'll obviously do the dirty work of a fullback, but he can catch the football a little bit. He can run with the football a little bit. And they found different ways to use him within the offense as well. So I think he'll find a place on this roster.
It is interesting to me, though, that he didn't use a lot of three receiver packages last year. Because, yes, your big three this year is better than your big three last year. Mm-hmm. Nico, going into this year, got paid after a big year. Last year, he didn't have the big year yet. Tank Dell's in year two of his NFL career after a promising rookie year. Last year, Tank was still a third-round pick. You added Stephon Diggs, who, of course, has a tremendous reputation around the NFL, has been incredibly productive. But I mean, you had plenty of receivers last year. You had plenty of receivers last year, and you still went three receiver lowest than anybody else in the NFL, which meant you're playing a whole lot of, like, they decided, okay, Andrew Beck's going to be on the football field more often than Robert Woods, Noah Brown, Xavier Hutchinson, and, you know, John Metchie. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of like it's what they want to do. Like, it's at least what Slowik wants to do. Like, Slowik wants a fullback on the field. He wants that blocker out there. So, like, how much he goes away. And then the other part is, like, yeah, he's probably going to go away from it because he likes the three receivers, but it's not his favorite thing to do. Is he not going to be as good at it, drawing plays out of that look versus a look that he's incredibly comfortable with?
Yeah, I think the big thing, though, is of all the guys we were talking about a year ago, I don't think any of them brings the level of explosiveness that you are adding with a Stephon Diggs. And so I don't think he's going to go completely away from it. I just feel like he's going to find ways to exploit how explosive of a football player Stephon Diggs is, and he will find a way to get all three of those guys involved. We already said, look, I think all three guys' numbers are going to go down if this is played right and correctly with the way they call plays and from week to week who they're, you know, really kind of zeroing in on to throw the football to.
So the Texans, we mentioned they were the, you know, towards the bottom in 11 person. You know, the highest was last year was the Rams. They used it 93% of the time. How, like, where do you want the Texans? Like, the Texans last year,
they used 11? 93% of the time?
Yeah.
Whew.
Like, yeah, I wouldn't have guessed that either. Like, No. Obviously Puka and Cooper on the field a lot, but I wouldn't have guessed that third receiver was out there that much.
That's a lot.
Carolina was second. That surprises me, too.
Yeah, a little bit. I would say 60% of the time.
I'm fine with that. Yeah. Like, although if you use it 60% of the time, the other 40% of the time fans are going to be livid.
Probably, but at the same time,
I mean, mad.
Situation matters too. But I think at the end of the year, if you get 60% of the time with 11 personnel on the football field, I think you gave everybody ample shots to do what they do best.
Yeah, I think that they're gonna. I think they'll use it way more than they used it last year. But I also like kind of that safe landing spot. I think they use it more than they used it last year, but I think they use it less than what people want them to use it.
Well, to your point, if it's his security blanket, if he feels most comfortable calling plays in the 21 personnel, then you can't fault them either if that's what he goes to when, you know, he feels he needs something that he knows exactly how to call based on the situation, the defense, and the game. So I'm not going to fault him if that's his comfort zone. But you got to exploit the weapons you got, and he's loaded.
Yeah. It'd be interesting. Like, Slowik's had to work a lot this offseason. Like, is Slowik going from a lot of, I'm not going to say that he was, I'm not going to use it, but going from a lot of 21, not much 11, to now a bunch of 11 and way fewer 21, like, he's going to have to kind of reinvent who he is.
Yeah.
Like, he's going to have to reinvent who he is. And I can't remember who it was around there was another offensive coordinator who last year, like, had the personnel. and he didn't really use the personnel to his advantage. I can't remember who it was. I think it might have been Eberflus, actually. I think I heard it on Hard Knocks. I think I was watching Hard Knocks when I heard it. Or maybe it's this year. Maybe it's Shane Waldron. Maybe it's Shane Waldron. Last year was Seattle. Right. Waldron was using a bunch of like two tight end, 21 personnel type stuff, and he didn't use a whole lot of 11. And they're like, why would you hire an offensive coordinator who hasn't used a whole lot of 11 when you have Keenan Allen, Rome Odunze, and DJ Moore, and you drafted Caleb Williams? So it's like, and they went out and they got him. Like, it's not like you already had Slowik and then you kind of reinvented who you are as a team.
Right.
They went out and got him and like, hey, come do a lot of this 11 personnel when it's not really what you're known for.
Yeah, especially if you know, you had that kind of roster and you knew that's what the direction you were going to. It's smart football business to go out and get a guy that has already been there, done that, called it, so that he can exploit everything to the fullest.
Key says, I think some of last year's wide receiver injuries is why we didn't have three receiver a lot more. There could be something to that, because Nico missed a couple of games. Yeah. Tank obviously missed the last handful of games. Noah Brown had his injuries. I don't think Woods played the full season either. I think Woods had, 4 weeks where he was hurt?
Yeah, I think he was banged up. Brown obviously was banged up.
Yeah, well, I don't even think Brown played half the games when you combine his injuries. Yeah, Woods played 14 games.
Brown had his two best games back-to-back and then basically was shut down.
I feel like that's the story of Brown's career. Brown played 10 games last year.
Man.
He did play 16 the year prior to that, but then the year before that he played 13. Keith is probably onto something there. Now, what will be interesting is, what if you have an injury to one of your three? So let's say you have your big three. Mm-hmm. You want to play a lot of 11 personnel, but you have an injury there. Slowik, like, okay, good. Back to what I like to do.
I don't think he says good, but he knows that I think it's a totally different ball game. If you lose one of those top three guys, then I think that unless you have a ton of confidence in a Noah Brown to step in and be able to do those same kind of things, then I think you absolutely revert back to what worked for you last year.
See, I think they do have that confidence in Brown, but it's like, are you going to be on the football field? Are you going to start on the 53? And then it goes back to the conversations we were having earlier. Is that why you're going to keep Woods? Do you feel comfortable with where Mechie's at in that? Do you feel comfortable with where Hutchinson's at in that? Slowik. I like Slowik. I trust that Slowik's going to be just fine, kind of having to reinvent his philosophies and things that he likes to do. And it's like he's foreign to it completely. I just don't think he's, would in a perfect world play as much three receiver sets as he would if he didn't have this personnel. But I have confidence in him, but he does have to reinvent who he is. And I haven't heard anybody talk about that.
No. Again, it just seems like it's a foregone conclusion when you add a Diggs that you're going to have all three of those guys on the field. And you're just going to kind of readjust.
0166, I think, makes a really good point. Could have been for protection for CJ last year with all the O-line problems. That's a good call.
Yeah.
That's a good call. Keep in an extra blocker, limit the amount of guys running a route, but keeping CJ healthy and keeping him upright, considering the offensive line woes. That's a good point, 0166. All right, Verlander's eyeing a, in his words, big, shiny number. I think we all know what that is. Would you bring Verlander back? At what cost? 713-780-3776. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
This is ESPN 97.5. You found the Killer Bees, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Did you know there's a new way to listen to our station on the radio? What if we told you it's clearer, stronger, and the best way to listen? If you have an HD radio in your car, you need to check out 97.9 HD2. Start listening on 97.9. You won't have to worry about changing your station ever again. 713-780-3776. Packers upgraded a quarterback. At least Blankers would say so. They traded for Malik Willis.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, they traded a seventh rounder for Malik Willis.
They were not pleased with their backups. And based on the little that I did see them and the people that I talked to, no one was pleased with their backups. So they were at least searching for someone that was at least more than serviceable.
You have a line to somebody in the training facility?
I might know some people.
You know some people on the staff?
I'm not saying that. I just might know some people.
You hate Jordan Love. Do you think Malik Willis will be starting over Jordan Love this year?
No, I do not. No, and I don't hate him. I just needed to see more. I wasn't in favor of paying him as much and as long as they did.
You think he's overrated?
Yes.
Okay, maybe I won't say hate anymore. It's my bad.
He was, by the way, in the same tier as CJ Stroud, that athletic list.
I thought that was a slap in the face to CJ. I I think CJ's better.
Okay. So you think he's overrated?
A little bit.
Jordan Love. I can't wait to keep up with Packers this year.
Just I know you will.
Yeah. I hope he's really
story
good.
At 3 o'clock, Jordan Love stat
yeah,
line.
I don't even worry about the fact that you guys will do it just to give me crap for it. But I'm going to believe what I see. And so far, I haven't seen enough to believe that he's as good as a lot of people are anointing him. And like I told you, when people back home are comparing him to CJ and who's better, and 90% of the poll is picking Jordan Love, they're out of their mind.
I saw somebody today, like a big name, I can't remember who it was, that was saying, I have no idea why people think CJ Stroud's better than Jordan Love. Love had a better year, blah, 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 blah.
Which, I just think that if you watch him,
Love was good last year.
He was good. He wasn't even close to what I saw in CJ. I just think that's a no-brainer, and we'll see how it plays out.
Yeah. 713-780-ESPN. Verlander's eyeing a big, shiny number. Would you bring Verlander? And, of course, I mean, the big, shiny number is 300 wins, right? We all agree with that? 300 mm-hmm. wins 300 is a big, wins. Shiny number?
Yep.
He didn't say what number. He just said a big, shiny number. So we all assume 300 wins. Would you bring Verlander back, and at what cost?
Yeah, I would. I think the price matters. I think that we always talk about that, and my concern is he broke the bank before when he and Scherzer wanted to get to 43. You did him a solid by bringing him back. He wanted to be back here. You gave up some prospects to get him, and now again for the second time in his career, you've paid him when he wasn't pitching. Now he's going to start pitching again. We hope between for the rest of the season. If the number is somewhere between 15 and 20 a year. Yeah, for sure. Depending on how far he wants to go and how high he wants to raise the ceiling, then there might be a certain point where I just say, hey, look, Kikuchi, the way he's pitching here, if you could get Kikuchi at a similar number.
No chance. No chance.
What do you think Kikuchi's going to bring on the open market?
Like
the high
20s? 25, at least.
And what do you, and be, well,
with as well as he's pitching, I think he blows Verlander out of the water.
I think Verlander, his age helps you. But I just don't know how much he's going to push the envelope and say, I still have to make this. But I would go, I guess, low 20s. If I can get him for low 20s, then I'll bring him back for another year.
I'm probably out at anything over 20. He's not the pitcher that he used to be. He's getting older, and like he's been injury prone. I'm willing to go year for year with Verlander, and maybe like a vesting option. Like if you ate 150 innings, like this year you had 140 innings. I'm willing to do something like that, but I'm not in the business of getting Verlander multi-years at this stage of his career. If you want to go year by year, we can play that game. Multi-year, no. And the Astros are going to be, like, they have a lot of controllable pitchers that are still going to be on this team next year. I think they have room for one starter to sign.
Agreed.
That's not under club control or under contract next year. I think Kikuchi's going to price himself out of the Astros. I think Verlander could sign for less than 20 because he's not having a great year, injury prone. I think he's going to want to be in a team that he likes being. And I think that he's also understanding that he hasn't, logged a bunch of innings. He's not having a, Cy Young type of year. I think that he's realistic.
I think he wants to be someplace where he's comfortable too. And he's been comfortable here in the past. He's spoken about, all the pitching staff and the pitching coaches and the analytics people and everything else as well. And praise them. But I think that if he's comfortable here and he knows that he's got a team around him that's going to give him his chance to stack the W's when he's chasing that number, I think that means something.
Yeah, he can't go play with, like, the Marlins.
Nope.
He can't just go chase the money and play for the Marlins if he wants to get to 300 wins. 50, 32 old, 8341, Flanders, him and Verlander, going to look for 2 or 3 year deal. I'm not sure anybody's going to want to look at that because he's chasing numbers. He's got targets that he wants to hit. Well, if no one's going to give him a 2 or 3 year deal, he's going to have to readjust the deal that he's looking for.
I think that's the other thing, too. When you're talking about a team that at least you have that really good working relationship with, to say, we'll leave it a fluid situation. We'll play it year by year. If you pitch your tail off this year, and then it warrants more money next year, then we'll sit there and we'll have that conversation. In the meantime, you can do us the solid, or however you want to phrase it, to just say, hey, we'll give you this for this year, and then we'll renegotiate at the end of the year.
Big C says the golden age will end in 1 to 3 years. Get ready for cheap tickets again. I'm going to save that for a segment tomorrow because you couldn't be any further wrong than that. Bad grammar on my part. Big C also says get rid of Lance McCullers for Verlander. You're not doing that. This money's guaranteed, Big C. It's not football. All right, 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRP listener line. Walt, you're in the Hive of the Bees. What's up, Walt?
Hey, what's going on? Talk a little bit about the Astros. Something y'all brought up about Verlander. They're paying him 17 already. So what you're going to pay him is a delta off of that. So if you pay him 20, it's only $3 million more than last year. Talk a little bit about the Astros. You know, earlier in the show, y'all were talking good, bad, and the ugly. You know, this is kind of a weird series. You had a good and you had a bad that were about the same. You know, you won two games, and that would be a split. So they going into the series, you would have thought that would have been good. But you thought you could have swept the thing, so that's bad. So, and then you got the ugly, which is still the Astros' injuries. And I think if you get one more stiff neck, the whole team is going to scream. But at least Alvarez is back in the lineup today, as is Bregman. You know, Bregman's a game-by-game situation. He's taking balls at first base. And, you know, funny, if he goes to first base, the Astros might be better off defensively with Whitcomb over third, and you can just spot DeCenzo in either spot as well. Now, the series was interesting, to say the least. The pitching was outstanding. The staff had a 318 with a 0.94 whip. Abreu was the only reliever to give up a run, and Taylor Scott was the only other reliever to give up a hit. So they really were good. And, boy, didn't Neris look – did y'all believe how happy Neris looked into being back in an Astros uniform? Man, you couldn't wipe the smile off his face. You know, Eric Geddy, of course, was super outstanding. All the starters were good, but, you know, Eric Geddy's a guy who's gone from an ERA that used to be somewhere closer to an AM radio station's frequency than a regular baseball ERA, and now it's down to 4.94, but it's, you know, not great, but look where he started. The pitchers or the hitters were at 250. OPS was 730, somewhere there. You had the back-to-backs with Bregman, and, you know, Yiner has 455 proof Yiner bomb. You had Pena with a couple of home runs. Altuve's deal giving the bat to the young fan was just classic Altuve. So you get out of Baltimore with a split. Magic number is 28 over Seattle. Now you go to Philly, so you get the privilege of facing Zach Wheeler and Aaron Nola in the first two games of the series. And then a good Christopher Sanchez on Wednesday. Astros throw Blanco, who hadn't won in a month and a half, JV and Eric Geddy again. Seattle hosts Tampa, so you hope you're going to get some help. You can't count on any more than one game, and the Astros are going through a tough stretch of the schedule. You have Philly, and then you got Kansas City home to Cincinnati and back at home to Arizona. So yeah, if they can just go .500 the rest of the season, the Mariners have to go 20-11 to catch them, and I'll take that bet.
Appreciate the call, Walt. The Astros have this little matchup they have to face, Wheeler and Nola. It's going to be a gauntlet.
Well, you hope, like we had talked about, when you think about the guys they've beaten this year, and they just beat Corbin Burns, and they've beat, you know, they've beat
Chris Shea and they beat the Tigers. I'm forgetting his name.
And, you know, they've stepped up in those big games. You hope they can step up against, you know, two really, really good pitchers for a good pitching staff in Philadelphia. I don't know. Good to get Yordan back. I'd like to see Altuve in the lineup, but you know you're just gonna roll with it and see how it goes. But we knew that this was the tough stretch of games for them anyway. But this is going to be a hell of a tough series, no matter what. And Philly, as much as they've been scuffling, you know, most of the season they've had the best record in baseball. They got a hell of a good offense.
You don't want Altuve to get a breather?
We've talked about this. If it's one game, fine. I know, and he really kind of at the series. He struggled.
Maybe 0 for 5 last night.
Yeah.
He needs a day. Spada said today, too, that they wanted to give him a day during the Baltimore series, but they couldn't because of, like, Yordan being hurt. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I guess they kicked the can down the road on one of his off days. Yeah. I mean, you got to give him. And today, I think, is a good day to do it, too, because Wheeler's so stinking good against righties. It's like, okay, you know, good pitcher, give him a day. It would be better if they had a left-handed option, but Whitcomb plays second base.
Walt did the Rock the Mic thing.
Walt was one of the semifinalists for Rock the Mic. Yeah, he's sure. The Astros baseball podcast.
But I did catch the fact that if you think that they're a better defensive team with Bregman at first base, I don't. There's no way. Bregman's playing at third base.
No, his range is fantastic. But if his arm is an issue, I could see that becoming like an ordeal.
Right, if it was. But since he's playing now three straight games at third base, I'm not going to worry about it.
His arm's not good, though. Like, even before the elbow drainage. Like, he's got one of the weaker arms in all of baseball at third.
But where he is good is on the run. And when, you know, off balance, he still makes – they might not be like cannon shots, but he makes the solid throw.
Yeah.
And because he has so much range, he's so good defensively there at third base. I mean, that's ideally in your best defensive lineup, he's your third baseman.
It helps with your offense, too. It helps with your offense.
Sure. We've talked about that. Yeah.
It gets you somebody else that you can stick in the lineup. Like today, they're playing Caratini at first, a lefty against a tough righty, and then you could DH Singleton, a lefty against a tough righty. All right, let's get to the Will of Bits. You never know what it's going to be. You just know it's going to be really good. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
It's the Killer Bees, and I honestly have no idea what's happening next. Could it be the next great big food debate? The biggest Joel rant of all time? Jeremy trolling someone to the point of crying? Or just some actual bees making some honey? Well, let's find out. It's time for the Wheel of Bits.
Oh my goodness, would you look at this? What an enormous spin.
Let's play Terrible Tweets.
Terrible Tweets. Saw so many. So many terrible tweets yesterday. All in a span of like 15 minutes. It's like, what is going on? This is a bad night. I don't know. Sometimes I don't like doing these. Sometimes I don't care. But yeah, there's a bunch of these. So
you
yesterday.
You trolled someone to the point of tears, as the intro says?
See, I usually have a rule on Twitter where I don't comment on things in an argumentative way. Sometimes I do. Sometimes I do. A lot of times, these terrible tweets are so I don't have to argue with them. It's like, oh, I want to argue with this, and then I just don't, but I'll do it tomorrow on the radio type of deal. Sarge, who's filled in on the show, he had one yesterday. He said, hating on Angel Reese because she is a good rebounder is weird. Yes, she can improve offensively, and she will. Remember that this is her rookie season. No one's hating on Angel Reese because she is a good rebounder. Nobody. They're hating on Angel Reese because she can't make a layup. That's why they're hating on Angel Reese. Yes, she's a great rebounder. Yes, she's racking up double-doubles. Yes, she's a rookie. Yes, her offensive game will improve. But no one's hating on Angel Reese because she's a good rebounder. They are 100% hating on Angel Reese because she can't make a layup.
You just have to watch any of the highlights. This is Calvin Murphy when he used to try and bang on Moses Malone and say Moses was padding his stats and just needed to get his rebound totals up, so he missed a couple of bunnies. But you watch her every single night. Oh, my God.
I don't watch her.
You can't help when you're watching SportsCenter or whatever. They show the highlights on SportsCenter and whatever, and because of the rebound totals, they show. And it's easy to show when she throws three shots to the bottom of the rim that never even get above the rim, and she rebounds all three of them. You're like, oh, my good.
They said this about Moses Malone, may God rest his soul. Not that he was as bad offensively as Angel Reese is relative to the WNBA. But there was a narrative that Moses Malone would pad some of his stats.
Oh, yeah. Murph used to give him a hard time out all the time.
That he would miss some bunnies knowing he could get the offensive rebound, and all of a sudden he would turn a 15-rebound game into a 20-rebound game. But he was never known for having a bad offensive game. Like, they're not hating on Angel Reese because she's a good rebounder. No one would hate on somebody for that. They're hating on her because she can't make bunnies. H-Town Wheelhouse does a great job. He's got an Astro podcast as well. Enjoy listening to it. Been on with him before. Yesterday, the Orioles hit a 3-run homer in the bottom of the fifth inning that tied the game. All right? Mm-hmm. Bottom of the fifth is something you need to keep in mind. All right? 3-run homer in the
fifth inning.
Brian?
Bottom of the fifth.
So we're all clear. It's in the bottom of the fifth. After this happened, H-Town Wheelhouse said, I'm tired of late inning home runs. Does anybody consider the fifth inning a late
inning? That's a middle inning.
It's a middle inning. You can actually divide these in baseball by threes because there's nine innings, divisible by three. First three innings, early innings. Middle three, middle. Late three, late innings. The fifth inning's in the middle of the middle. It's in the middle of the middle.
Late innings starts in the seventh inning, I think we would all agree.
We're at the midway point. Every time, TK does it a lot. When we go to the middle of the fifth inning, we're at the midway point.
Or we're with halfway the
Astros.
Through.
Yes, we're at the, with the Astros or whatever that tells the score. But that's always the key kind of notation. We're at the midway point.
It's a fifth inning. It's in the middle of the middle innings.
It couldn't be more middle.
The only thing that could be more middle is if there was a home run in the middle of the fifth.
Could have been. The only thing more middle was the Kikuchi fastball when he was with Toronto.
Yeah, or a Hector Neris middle fastball he got away with. Cron.com today, this isn't necessarily a terrible tweet. It's more of a terrible headline. And look, these headline writers usually aren't the people who wrote the story. So I'm not going to even say who wrote the story because there's a very good chance she didn't write the headline. I guess I blew it there. Spencer Arrighetti emerges as Astros ace. in postseason emergence. Oh, no. As the Astros ace, Eric Geddy's been pitching really well.
Yes.
He's been pitching really stinking good. Is Spencer Eric Geddy anywhere near the top of this rotation?
Is he better than Fromber? Is he better than Hunter Brown? No. The answer to that is no.
He's at best third, and that's if you're going production and putting him ahead of Verlander.
Even third is a tough case to
yeah.
make.
Or like Blanco, though he's fallen off a little bit, but all year Blanco's been carrying you.
You can make the argument
how far of a
ahead
push
of
can you go? How far of a push can you go with Arrighetti?
Four.
I think you could go three if you argue results. If you argue results, I think you can go as high as three. You can have him result-based over Verlander. He's been hurt. He's only made one start.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you could still go over Kikuchi because the stretch of him pitching really good has been longer than Kikuchi's five games. So I think you can go as high as third based on productivity.
You mentioned Blanco because he hasn't looked the way he looked earlier in the year.
He's kind of faded.
Yeah, that I'll have the conversation with you on. Yeah, if you just want to go lately how arrogant he's looked. But look, before this start, we wanted to see what he was going to bring because he had a little bit of a hiccup previous to that again, where you're like, we need to figure out which Arrighetti we're going to get as we go down the stretch, not necessarily penciling him as an ace.
Crom.com has the worst headlines.
I will say, though, I sympathize a little bit with the headline writer because Spencer Arrighetti emerges as Astros' fourth or fifth option down playoff stretch is not a sexy headline. So I sympathize a little bit that you gotta sex it up a little bit.
You gotta sensationalize a bit, but you can't sensationalize this. Now you're fake news.
Right, exactly. Ace goes the other way. You're going to get mocked.
He emerges as Astros ace. In no world is Spencer, maybe not even the world of Arrighetti, is Spencer, like the Arrighetti family, as lovely as they are, they're even saying Spencer Arrighetti's nowhere near the ace of the Astros.
Arrighetti continues to solidify his spot or something, but not ace.
Emerges as Astros
makes
ace.
For a playoff rotation spot.
Yeah.
Would have been fine.
Or he's getting hot, or he's pitching really well. Like, I mean, I guess that's not like
or
sexy.
Back to form, because he had a little bit of a hiccup the last time. Back to
or
form.
Could he be
dominant.
Future ace?
Yeah. Like
you can put future in front of it, and then you can still use the word ace, and it's fine.
Like I do see what you're saying, Brian. Like you have to sensationalize. You can't be like Spencer Arrighetti solidifying his spot in the back of the Astros rotation. More accurate, but maybe not as clickbaity.
Yeah,
Arrighetti
dominates as he solidifies spot or something.
Yeah, like I think there's ways to do it, but Spencer
could he be playoff star.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think
or,
would be
or Spencer Arrighetti emerging as a contender for Rookie of the Year. Maybe a bit of a reach, but it's not as big a reach as Astros ace.
That'd be more fine than ace.
Yeah, it's fairer than Astros ace. And for the record, I did not click the story. I didn't want to participate in this clickbait.
So it didn't work on you.
I just screen grabbed the terrible headline, tweeted it out, and then used it later for terrible tweets. All right, last one. Chandler Rome of The Athletic. Does phenomenal work. He tweeted yesterday, Yiner Diaz's 455-foot home run is the longest he's hit as a major leaguer. You can thank me later for looking up that information.
That's not that hard to look up.
No, that's not the point. He's throwing a shot at Dusty Baker. Can we please let that man enjoy retirement instead of sending strays to Dusty Baker because you didn't get along with him? Let that man retire peacefully.
Yeah, that's right. I didn't even catch that part of it.
I didn't either.
Yeah,
Let him retire. Stop throwing shade.
Long reach for Chandler.
And he does it every chance he gets with Yiner. Every chance he gets with Yiner.
Yeah.
You're a reporter, man. Stop throwing shots at the former manager because y'all didn't get along.
Yeah, that's weak sauce. You don't need to keep – don't beat the dead
it's
horse.
Very
Dusty's
petty.
Gone.
Yeah. Very petty.
Very petty.
And I actually kind of like petty, but maybe this is a little too petty.
I like petty, too. Bad joke, but
2.1,
2.0. I'm gonna price it right.
Gary Petty. Jr.?
I'm okay with Petty, but not from like a beat reporter.
Yeah, that's kind of the problem.
Like
Petty's fine, but you're a beat reporter.
You
man.
Expect it from like a a talking head jabroni like me,
right?
From like a goofball who just talks trash about everybody. You don't expect it from a guy covering the beat.
Someone with journalistic standards.
Yeah, that's okay, actually media. I'm not media. I create content. An influence.
I was curious with you guys, what side you're on, though, when you start talking about stuff like this, what Dion did at Colorado because of the guy that was writing stuff that they didn't like, that they've banned him from the locker room and everything like that.
I don't support Dion.
I think that's awful. I think it is awful.
It is awful. You ruined my car wreck of the day. Thank you.
Well, it was going to be – I had thought about putting it on car wreck of the day, too, but I thought it actually warranted which side we were on and kind of the reasons behind it and a longer discussion. Because to me, when I look at it, I just look at it and say – because I've worked with people that have tried to do this to people, and I just think, you're a man enough in that locker room, and if you don't want to answer his question, you can just say next question, look on to the next guy. But you can't ban a guy just because you don't like what he writes.
Why did Tad Brown want to ban a guy?
Oh, you actually know the other guy too, but you're absolutely right. It wasn't just one, but there was one in specific that was always on his list, and he wanted to do it all the time. We had to explain to him why he couldn't do it.
Finishing up the story to recover from this hijack, Michael Schwab tweeted that he tweeted to everybody on Twitter that he wanted to let everybody know that he unsubscribed to The Athletic.
Because of that?
Well, I don't think it's because of this. I think it was because Chandler Rome blocked him. Little Twitter. And McTaggart blocked Schwabby.
I don't get, really?
Yeah.
I don't get why people have the need to tell the world what they're unfollowing.
I know. It's kind of pretentious.
It's so me. Like, look at me while you're... it's just weird.
Yeah. I wouldn't expect that out of McTaggart, would you?
Well, I think they're tired of their dugout reports, with Espada. They're kind of quoting what Espada's saying and getting that news out. And then, Schwab will tweet, Espada said this in the dugout while he's not in the dugout. And they're like, well, how did he get this? Yeah. So I think they blocked him so he could stop getting that.
Mm.
That's my guess.
Okay.
Grade the theory, 1 to 10.
It's not bad.
It's a 7.
Yeah.
I think it's plausible. 10,
but it's my theory, so. Grade the theory, Blankers.
I'll give it a 6.
Weak sauce. It's a 10. All right.
I got a 2.1 for Tom Petty.
Well, let's ask the listeners what they think. Was I wrong? Were Brian and I wrong? Was the Tom Petty joke good? Or grade it, 713-780-3776. Grade the Tom Petty joke, 713-780-3776. We'll also get to our car wreck of the day. What is your car wreck of the day? 713-780-3776. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
You alright?
My leg is broken. The bone's coming through.
Let me see. Ah! Bone, you prick. Where's my money?
This is the car wreck of the day.
Car wreck of the day. What is yours? 713-780-3776. Ronel Blanco's pitching today. We need to get Ronel Blanco's song.
We do.
Let's see. 6-man rotation. He's probably not pitching again until Sunday.
And this game's already started. Mojo back with the song.
Yeah, definitely. That's kind of how we got Fromber back.
Yeah, Fromber needed all of our help.
Well, when we got Fromber back, it wasn't this year. It was last year when we did the roller
coaster. No, I think it was 2 years ago.
Well, and then he went on the quality start
string. I think he did. No, it did kind of, I don't know if I want to say correlate, but maybe coincidentally.
I'm not going to say we did it.
But. There we go. Let's go coincide it. Yeah, we got to come up with maybe his next weekday start. Get Blanco going again. I don't think we have time to talk about it here. 713-780-3776. What's your car wreck of the day?
To me, it was the Astros just defensively all weekend, and then specifically it would be Abreu's eighth inning pitching and Singleton's first base fielding.
Those are good. Now, what is Abreu doing going home, by the way?
I just don't understand that. I mean, everybody, you understand with a 3-run lead, that run right there is insignificant, and you had a boatload of time to turn that thing.
Yeah, that was very low S2-y of him.
For sure.
Very low S2-y. I want to nominate the Florida State Seminoles. Their season ended in week 0 on foreign soil.
Oh, that, I was rooting so hard for that. We were watching that. It was because it was on live during the bullpen this last Saturday. That was a lot of fun watching Georgia Tech get that dub.
Yeah, that was funny. That was a good game, though.
It was a very good
Haynes
game.
Haynes King, the Haynes one that got
solid.
Away.
Yeah.
The one that got away. What are you nominating, Brian?
I got two on the Orioles fans. One, when they would show the wide shots last night on Sunday Night Baseball, did you guys notice how few people were there
at Camden
Yards?
Yeah.
Especially in the upper deck. It was in like 4 or 5 sections in a row. Not just like low attendance, like nobody in the complete whole sections. Like it was 2012 Astros baseball. It was embarrassing how few fans were there.
To be fair, you're not supposed to go out in Baltimore once the sun goes
down.
That
is true.
That's fair.
But the first 3 days of the series, it looked like it was packed.
Yeah, it was just weird. Sunday night baseball, you're in a pennant race with the Yankees, the Astros are in town, and no one's there. It's just, man, it was weird. And
yeah,
the other one, I don't know if you guys caught this, was also on the broadcast. When Altuve got out to go the 0-for-5, there was some idiot fan that stood up and decided to – just turn to the audience and give the 0-for-5 signal. Like, it's Jose Altuve. Oh, you got over on Jose Altuve. He had an 0-for-5 after he homered in back-to-back days. But, oh, this idiot stayed up in the
stands. And then Eddie Perez had to, like, explain it to everybody, too. He goes like, oh, and by the way, what that guy's doing right there is Altuve's 0-for-5. Like, oh.
I actually think it's kind of good. I think it's a pretty good jeer.
I guess.
I think it's pretty solid.
I thought it was. We all like Jose Altuve's going into slump now because some idiot in Baltimore stood up and said 0-for-5.
I think it's a pretty good little. Like, you mean people you know, give jeers like, and ridicule opponent. That's a pretty good one.
If the Orioles were leading 8-1, I'm with you. But they're losing at the time. But
that's true, too.
He's celebrating Altuve being 0-for-5 while they're losing.
I like a good heckle. I think it's a pretty good heckle.
That dude's going to catch it. It's just inevitable. His whole career, no matter what the circumstance and who the crowd is, he's catching it all the time.
I mean, they do that with great players. King of Twitch, Carrack, J-Bone's inflated influence. I can't help it. I can't help that I have an inflated influence. 8755, don't give him a song. I might jinx him. Have you seen how Renel Blanco has been pitching lately?
He can use a jinx.
He can use a jinx. Yeah. Reverse jinx. Just a normal jinx would help. 3154, Joel thinks it's a great joke, and he won't back down. That's a good joke.
Thank you, Tom.
That one's better.
Very well played.
Josh from Seabrook, car wreck of the day, Giancarlo Stanton's bat. I hope that umpire is okay. That was brutal.
I didn't see it.
Swung, cracked his bat, but didn't break it all the way, so cracked it. So whenever his follow-through, it kind of whiplashed back and drilled the umpire in the back of the head. And he wasn't wearing the hockey mask. He's wearing the normal mask with just the hat on the backside, so it was an exposed back of his skull. Yeah, it didn't look like it caught him flush, but I mean, he went down, had to get carted off. Yeah, it was pretty scary looking. Didn't look great. Car wreck of the day, 3209. New Mexico blowing a 21-point lead and losing my parlay. Well, you should have live bet it when it was a 21-point game, 3209. Pro tips. Giving you pro tips for free.
Did you see the Texas Little League? I know you didn't. The Texas Little League team that went undefeated through regionals, undefeated through the Little League World Series, played for the United States Championship, was up 5-0 after the first four innings and gave up 2-5 spots and lost.
Brutal. Brady was on the mound. No, I wasn't watching.
I didn't realize this because I always think that it's always the United States Championship and the United States team never has a chance in the big one. The United States has won the last 6 overall World Series.
USA.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how much I do not care.
I know. You don't like Little League Baseball.
I don't. I think it's creepy that people watch it. I think it's a little creepy. I'm watching Little League Baseball. I did see how the championship ended. The PFP.
Yeah.
It's like the Astros PFPs. Just threw it to an open area where nobody was.
The poor kid fielded it, thought a first baseman was going to be there, and no such thing.
I want to nominate Dion. Dion needs to be nominated for car wreck of the day for boycotting that reporter's questions. Ridiculous.
They said that he has it in his contract or something.
How?
There's something in his contract that they can do that?
That's so weird.
That is bizarre. And yet they also say that during press conferences, he intentionally promotes all of his sponsors.
I don't mind that. Neither should we. As
he's
people
got a boatload of sponsors. He's a pigeon.
I saw that he got all of his team bank accounts at that one bank, and they got like $2,100. That's pretty cool.
And he said, he's taking care of bank accounts for the players that have children.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's part of it.
Like his players?
Yes.
Some young dads.
The children need to be cared for and looked after, and that's part of what he wants to do.
Did you see what Floyd Mayweather's still fighting. He's like the busiest retired boxer I've ever seen.
He fights.
He's kind of smart, though, because he fights in these exhibition fights where it doesn't influence his record, his undefeated record. He's still making tons of money fighting in these exhibitions that have zero influence of his record. He fired the referee mid-fight.
He can do that?
I guess. Did you see this, Brian?
It's his promotion putting on the fight, so he can probably do whatever he wants.
He was like, they were kind of tied up, and he hit the boxer like a little bit in the back of the head. And like they broke him up, which you should do as a referee. And Mayweather like lost his mind. He's like, get out of here. And they fired him. They fired the referee mid-fight.
They have to escort him from the building like the UFC guy?
I don't know.
Car wreck of the day nominee to anyone who buys Floyd Mayweather fights in 2024.
Where was that fight? I think it was like overseas, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was on the zone, so I don't even know if it was an extra charge, if it was just a normal monthly charge for the zone, but...
I'd rather watch Floyd Mayweather fight exhibitions than Jake Paul.
True.
It's actual fighting. Fact. Well, I don't know if it's actual fighting, but at least he used to be an actual fighter.
Did I see that they rescheduled the Jake Paul-Tyson fight?
Yeah, it's in November now.
November, yeah.
It's in November.
I probably will watch, actually. and I'll mock Netflix. And ridicule it. Yeah, I hope he gets. Oh, Tyson knocks him out.
Oh, I think we all do, but they're not going
to.
They'll dance
just
around.
How much intensity Tyson's going to bring to the table?
I mean, 68. All right, what's going to win here?
Astros defense.
I was going to say Deion.
Either one's fine.
We'll go Deion. We'll have more chance to get Astros defense. So, Deion, congratulations. You're our car wreck of the day. You win something. All right, does it for us. Thanks to Brian for doing hard work. He's Blank. I'm Brian. I'm ESPN National right now on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.
ESPN 97.5.